Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Welcome to Radio at Firehouse and today's podcast on catastrophic multiple fatality fires. My name is Ed Kamau and I'm the publisher of Campus Firewatch and former chief fire investigator for the National Fire Protection Association. I'd like to start by thanking Firehouse.com for hosting this program and allowing us to help bring national attention to the issue, which has really struck home just within the past few days. Today's show is sponsored by the National Fire Sprinkler Association, which would like to remind you that the residential fire deaths can be reduced significantly with the inclusion of the time-tested and proven technology of residential fire sprinklers. To learn more about the National Fire Sprinkler Association, please visit www.nfsa.org. Well, we have a very impressive group of experts with us to discuss this pressing problem today, including Judy Carmeletti from NFPA, Heather Caldwell from KITA, Peg Paul from the Home Fire Sprinkler Coalition, Alan Schumann from the Georgia State Fire Marshal's Office, Ben May from Walt Disney World, and Ozzie Murkoff from the City of Las Vegas Fire Department. You know, just within the past 6 days, we've had a series of six multiple fatality catastrophic fires. They've really claimed a lot of lives, especially since over half of them have been children, which really has driven this whole thing today. So we're really going to look into the various aspects of what we can do to try to address this problem and stop it. But I'd like to start off with a quick overview of some of the stats relating to fire deaths in general, which come from a number of reports prepared by the NFPA. And then we'll move into discussing the problems of these catastrophic fires with our guests. Well, each year, almost 3,700 people die in fires across the United States, with over 80% of these deaths happening in the homes. Ironically, 65% of Americans feel safer in the homes than a high-rise, according to a survey just released this week by the Society of Fire Protection Engineers. And over 40% of the people surveyed only think about fire just once a year or less. Most, if not all, of these homes did not have a residential sprinkler system. And on the average, a fire breaks out every 83 seconds. Somebody dies in a residential fire every 143 minutes. And the leading cause of these fatal fires is smoke and materials. Almost three-fourths of the residential fire deaths take place in homes where there are no smoke alarms or the alarms didn't operate at all. And these fires caused $7 billion in residential property damage in 2005. Now, it's kind of a lot of stats that just got thrown at you, and if you look on the page here, you'll find links to it or more information about these things that you can use in your own community when you're trying to make the message or drive the lessons home to everybody. But what really drove this podcast today, as I mentioned, there's recently been a number of multiple fatality fires across the United States. Since February of last year, they've been collecting some anecdotal information on fires that have killed three or more people. And since I'm gathering this information from the wire service and the Internet, I really have to believe there's more incidents than the ones that I've just been able to collect so far. But since February 28th of last year, a total of 151 people have died in fires where there were three or more fatalities, with 46% of these deaths being children. These incidents have included, among others, Evansville, Tennessee, where nine people just died, Reno, Nevada, where 12 people were killed in a residential hotel fire, and in Anderson, Missouri, where 10 mentally challenged people were killed in a group home fire, Huntington, West Virginia, where nine people died in an apartment fire. Three of them were students at Marshall University, and another two were the brother and the sister of one of the students who was just visiting at the time. And just within the past 6 days, 10 people were killed in a house fire in Bardstown, Kentucky, four children in Friendsville, Tennessee, and just a series more that have just broken within the past few days. Again, if you look on the website here, you'll find a little bit more detail about these fires that have just happened. They really grab our attention, these fires, because of the tragedy of so many people dying in a single incident. As fire safety professionals, what really bothers us is that they're so avoidable, yet they keep occurring. Firehouse.com and Radio at Firehouse thought that this was such an important and timely issue that they committed to hosting this podcast, and the National Fire Sprinkler Association immediately stepped forward to provide the support to make it happen. As I mentioned, we have a panel of very distinguished people that on very short notice have agreed to take part and offer their expertise and thoughts on this issue. So let's get to seeing what they have to say and what lessons we can learn from them that we can use in our own communities. I'd like to start with our first guest, Judy Carmelletti. Judy is NFPA's Assistant Vice President of Public Education and directs the education component of NFPA's mission to reduce the impact of death and injury on our society. Judy is responsible for the association's public education programs, including the Center for High-Risk Outreach. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Judy.
Thanks, Ed. We know the vast majority of fire deaths can be prevented by people practicing fire-safe behaviors. Everyone needs to know how to prevent fires and what to do if a fire occurs. Smoke alarms and a home fire escape plan should be part of our monthly routines. And home fire sprinklers are the best way to protect homes and people from the dangers of fire. And as Ed said, 74% of the residential fire deaths that occur in homes where there are no smoke alarms or the smoke alarms are not working. So we have a lot of work ahead of us. The leading causes of home fires are cooking, smoking, heating, electrical equipment, and intentional. Let's take a moment to look at each of the causes of fire. Cooking. Cooking equipment is involved in more than 100,000 reported home fires each year. And most of these involve the kitchen stovetop. Most cooking of fires occur because of unattended cooking. NFPA has come up with some messaging to help with this unattended cooking issue. What we want people to do is to pay attention to your cooking. Stay in the kitchen when you are frying, grilling, or broiling food. And this is because what we have found out is that frying is where the fires are being caused. So we need people to stay in the kitchen, especially when they're frying. If you must leave the room, even for a short period of time, turn off the stove. When you're simmering, baking, boiling, or roasting food, you need to check it regularly. Stay in the home and use a timer to remind you. These are just three important messages to help residents cook safely. Smoking. As Ed said, smoking is the leading cause of home fire deaths. Smoking materials The most common thing first ignited in home smoking fires is trash, followed by mattresses, our bedding, and upholstered furniture. What we need to do is to make sure that people are careful with their smoking materials. Keep matches and lighters up high, out of the reach of children. Also, if you have smokers in your home, designate a smoking area outside the home and provide nice, deep, sturdy ashtrays. Another important feature would be if people decide to smoke, ask them to choose fire-safe cigarettes. They are less likely to cause fires. Heating, especially this time of year. Heating equipment is a leading cause of home fires during the months of December, January, and February. It's important for people to know to keep space heaters It's important for people to know to keep space heaters at least 3 feet from things that can burn. That includes people, bedding, and remember to turn your space heaters off when you leave the home or go to bed. Electrical safety. In 1999 to 2002, electrical equipment accounted for 1 out of 11 reported home fires and 1 out of 13 home fire deaths. It's important to replace or repair loose or frayed cords on all electrical devices and never overload extension cords or outlets. And only one heat-producing appliance should be plugged into a receptacle at a time. Replace wall outlets with arc fault circuit interrupters, which can protect against fire by monitoring the electrical current in a circuit and shutting off the circuit when unintended arcing occurs. And finally, intentional fires. In 2005, an estimated 31,500 intentionally set structure fires occurred. Encourage your community to implement an anti-arson program. Keep trash from collecting on your property. Install lighting around the property to deter intruders. These are the top five causes of home fires. NFPA has free fact sheets that can be downloaded and distributed to residents. The sheets include important facts about the specific fire problem, as well as safety tips. We've also focused our Fire Prevention Week campaigns on many of these issues, such as cooking. And we also have educational programs such as Risk Watch and Remembering When, which address all of the leading causes of fire, as well as the importance of smoke alarms, escape planning, and home fire sprinklers. The Sparky the Fire Dog and Risk Watch websites teach children about fire safety with fun interactive games. Now, I know that other fire safety groups have websites as well as materials available, and we can visit many of these sites to find information to use with residents in the community as well as kids. There's a lot of good information available out there. Those at highest risk are the most difficult to reach. Many live in very rural, remote areas with not a lot of access to services and the media. These residents are not as likely to get messages in traditional ways. We need to adjust our messages to help reach these people who are not able to receive our information in the normal channels. The other thing is that most people don't think that fire can happen to them. That is, until there's a major tragedy in the community where all of a sudden our awareness is peaked. We need to make sure that our public education messaging is ongoing. We need to maintain the awareness of the public, and we also need to raise the awareness of the public to change their behavior. We still have a lot of work to do, but I do think that we are up to the challenge.
Thanks, Judy. Some really great information there. And again, a lot of that's going to be on the website, radio@firehouse.com, if you take a look there. Judy, one of the things I'd like to ask you about is, obviously, you know, the kids are a high-risk group, but, you know, they're not the ones making the decisions. You know, like the fire that we just talked about where three kids were killed in Detroit, and it looks like there are no smoke alarms there, you know, they didn't make that choice. It's an parent or it's an adult, and that seems to just so often be the case. And you mentioned that, you know, these are people that are sometimes hard to reach. Do you have any ideas or suggestions or programs that people have been doing to reach out to this demographic of people that, you know, may not be getting their information in their traditional ways? Do you have some good examples that you could briefly talk about?
That's a good point, Ed. Yes, we've had a couple of good has good experience with some projects, such as we've done a project with Scholastic News, which is an in-school newspaper that reaches all grade levels in the school, and we've included letters that would go home to families so that the kids get the information in school and then the information is brought home to the caregivers in the family. We also include letters home in all of our educational programs as well as our Fire Prevention Week activities, because many of these things, kids do not have an opportunity to really take control of smoke alarms in the home. But they can bring the message home if they learn about it in school and ask mom or dad or grandma or grandpa, where are our smoke alarms? Can we test our smoke alarms tonight? So there are ways to get to the homes through the kids in school. Another way to reach this audience is maybe utilizing health care workers who are visiting homes, especially older adults, and equipping these people with a checklist or something like that where they can ask the resident, do you have a smoke alarm? Let's check your smoke alarm now just to make sure that these are working. I think any time we can get the message out to our residents, church bulletins, you know, church groups are a great way to get safety information out there. Just a message in the bulletin to remind people to test their smoke alarms. The smoke alarm message is just so important, and we really need to get that information out to make sure that people are testing their smoke alarms, make sure that they have smoke alarms, and also make sure that they have a home fire escape plan.
Some really great information there, Judy. Really appreciate it. And again, take a look at the links on the page here, and you'll be able to find a lot of good program sources and the information that Judy covered there. All right. Now, one of the things that Judy mentioned quite a bit there is smoke alarms. And it's, I know from the campus environment, it's pretty frustrating because you know, a lot of times the students move in and smoke alarms are there and they disable them. They take them down, they remove the batteries, they cover them over for whatever reason. Or even if they're not there, one of the things we always say is that, you know, for the price of a pizza, you can get, you know, peace of mind, and you can just get a smoke alarm and put it in there. So it is somewhat frustrating to us as fire safety professionals wondering why people just don't have something that will really save their lives. And we see this in fires time and time and time again. So the next person I would like to introduce would be Heather Caldwell from KITA, who's going to talk about smoke alarms. Heather is the communications manager and works closely with fire departments, nonprofit organizations, and the media to educate families about home fire safety and smoke alarm usage. So with that, Heather, can you tell us a little bit about smoke alarms?
Thanks, Ed. As Judy mentioned, and as we all know in the fire industry, it is very frustrating when a smoke alarm that can save lives and provide early warning isn't operable when a home fire happens. You know, fires take more lives than all other natural disasters combined, but a smoke alarm, working smoke alarm, dramatically increases the chances of survival in a fire. Studies show that while 96% of homes in America have smoke alarms, nearly 20% of those alarms do not work, mainly due to dead or missing batteries or old age. And as Ed pointed out, many of these smoke alarms, again, they're not being used, they're being disabled. From our experience, we find that many consumers are just generally unaware of the potential dangers in their home. They do not understand, nor do they believe, that a home fire will happen to them. They don't realize the need to maintain smoke alarms, nor do they see the need to practice a fire escape plan with their families. Oftentimes, that thought process changes only when a tragedy occurs in their community. When a fatal fire happens, it will spur families to act to make sure that their home is protected. But unfortunately, it often takes a tragedy for this to happen. Fire departments will tell us that they go into homes and they'll find a smoke alarm without batteries working in it, but that they'll find a remote control with batteries or a child's electronic toy with batteries. Oftentimes, fire departments say they believe that the families are taking those batteries out of the smoke alarms and using them in toys or remote controls. That's something that we need to figure out a way to stop from happening. One thing we've found is that consumers do respond when the news media calls them to action, and they are motivated by education, and they also respond more when they believe their children may be at risk. By working together, the industry, working with the media, nonprofit organizations, to really educate families and to remind them consistently about the need for fire safety in their home, not just during Fire Safety Month or Home Safety Month, but year-round, making the message stick year-round, hopefully we can save lives. Now, Ed mentioned smoke alarms. There are two different types of smoke alarm technology, photoelectric and ionization. Ionization alarms are designed specifically to detect flaming fire conditions, such as paper fires and those fed by flammable fluids. Photoelectric alarms are designed specifically to detect smoldering smoke conditions, such as bedding and upholstery fires that often kill people who are sleeping. We know smoking is a leading cause of fatal fires in homes. For maximum protection, we recommend that homeowners install both photoelectric and ionization technology alarms in their homes, which may provide the earliest opportunity of detecting either smoldering or fast flaming fires. Studies show that, on average, you have less than 3 minutes from the sound of the first smoke alarm to escape a home fire. That's why it's so important to be able to hear a smoke alarm when it goes off. Families need to be reminded to install working smoke alarms in every room of the home. That gives them the earliest warning and a better chance of escaping a fire. One option that has just come about are using wireless smoke alarms. You know, interconnected smoke alarms work very well because when one alarm sounds, they all sound, and that provides more warning in more places. However, most homes in America do not have the capability right now to easily install interconnected smoke alarms. Most of them right now only have battery-powered single-station smoke alarms. A new technology, wireless technology, uses radio frequency waves to link smoke alarms together so that when one sounds, they all sound. Again, you get that interconnected smoke alarm system, but you do not have to go and rewire your home. For homes that have only battery-powered smoke alarms, this provides a way for them to upgrade to an earlier warning system and gives their family more warning no matter where the fire starts, giving them more time to escape. Smoke alarms don't last forever. We need to remind the public that they need to replace them every 10 years. Reminding the public to test smoke alarms monthly and replace batteries as needed, and also to practice a fire escape plan both during the day and at night. That will train families to act quickly in case of a fire, no matter when the fire starts. All of these things, if we can continue to remind the public of the things that they need to do on a regular basis, we can help save more lives. And again, I think working as an industry, working with the media and with nonprofit organizations to reach the consumers, reach homeowners on a regular basis, not just once or twice a year, will really help to improve home safety in general across the U.S.
Okay, thanks, Heather. I'm going to kind of pose the same question to you that I did to Judy. You know, according to some of the stats from NFPA, 96% of the homes in this country have smoke alarms. So in a way, I mean, any company would be really happy with that kind of market saturation, shall we say. But so many of the fires happen in the homes that don't have them. You know, what can we do to crack that part of it, you know, to really reach out to these people and say, look, you know, again, like my analogy, for the price of a pizza, you can have something that's going to save your life. It's so frustrating. I mean, one of these fatal fires that I was talking about, when they were doing the investigation, they found the smoke alarm in the box without batteries, sitting on the kitchen table. And boy, as a firefighter walking in and finding it, that must be so frustrating when you're pulling these bodies out and you see that device there that could have saved their lives. Do you have any ideas on, you know, how to reach that last 4% of the homes out there that don't have these?
I think it really comes down to just education, and getting parties involved. You know, as Judy said, a lot of these fatal fires happen in rural communities where maybe they don't have access to big programs, but there's news stations everywhere across America. Everyone has access to, a radio station or a television station or a newspaper, even if it's just a community newspaper, you know. And again, we find that when the news media calls consumers to action, they respond. Working with the news media, getting them to use safety messages proactively before a fatal fire occurs and use them consistently, not just during Fire Safety Month, but finding new ways to get those messages into news stories to educate the public will, I believe, really make an impact. Helping with programs such as smoke alarm programs, I know most fire departments offer free smoke alarms to those who may not be able to afford that purchase. But as you stated, you know, they may have a smoke alarm, but do they have it installed? I think sometimes we need to go one step further and make sure that those smoke alarms that are being donated get up where they need to be on the ceiling or the wall, that they're installed and not just sitting in a box, because they won't do anybody any good sitting in a box. Doing more community awareness events, canvassing the community before a fire occurs, again, using things like brochures, door knockers, things like that, working with children. You know, we all know that when a child starts bugging you over and over and over again to test your smoke alarm, because we learned this at school, and our smoke alarms work, or where's our fire escape plan, parents are going to act. They're going to get their home safe because their child is bugging them to do it, and they want to make their child safe. I think all of these types of programs will help. KIDA has developed a free resource for fire departments that has downloadable brochures, safety information, and such, called Fire FYI, and fire departments can use these materials when they are going out to canvas neighborhoods or to talk to children, or to give lesson plans to teachers to integrate into their their daily activities. You know, if it's Fire Safety Month, maybe a history teacher can do a history on fire, firefighting in America, and incorporate a fire escape plan lesson into their teaching. All those kind of things, I think, will really help.
Well, some great ideas, and we'll have some more information on the Fire FYI on the website. If you look at the links on the page here, you'll be able to link to that from Kitta. And you had mentioned working with the media. Just, you know, kind of while you were talking here, I was surfing the net looking in Detroit. That fire that just killed the three kids is no longer on the top web pages of the news media. I mean, it's in a blink of an eye, it gets replaced by something more important. So a lot of this, I think, too, is reinforcing with the media the importance of this, so they keep it on their radar screen as well. Because, yeah, the media is a great asset to reaching out to the public and getting that information to them. So thank you very much, Heather.
Well, thank you.
We've talked about prevention. We've talked about smoke alarms. Another really key component of this is suppression. And so often, and unfortunately, in a way, we depend on the fire department for suppression. And while they do a tremendous job, and they get there as quickly as they can, you know, there is a time delay. And by the time the fire department gets the call and responds and gets on the scene and actually applies water to the fire is continuing to grow all that time. And it's killing, it's endangering people, and as a vast majority of the people die from smoke inhalation, not from the actual fire. In other words, they're incapacitated, and they're not able to get out. A great solution to that, as we all know, and I know I'm preaching to the choir out there, is sprinkler systems, and in particular, residential sprinkler systems. So we have with us Peg Paul, who's been with the Home Fire Sprinkler Coalition as their communications manager for the past 10 years. She's developed a number of acclaimed programs for the coalition during her time with the association. And Peg, do you think you could fill us in a little bit about residential fire sprinklers and how they're being used across the country?
Yes, thank you, Ed, and thank you, Firehouse.com. First of all, just so everybody is aware of who the Home Fire Sprinkler Coalition is, we are a nonprofit educational group, and our mission is to save lives by increasing the awareness of the benefits and availability of residential fire sprinkler systems, ultimately increasing the number of installations in new one- and two-family dwellings. So our focus is really more on new construction, but whenever we can, we do like to try and answer questions about retrofitting existing homes. Our steering committee members include the American Fire Sprinkler Association, the Canadian Automatic Sprinkler Association, the Home Safety Council, the National Fire Protection Association. Judy sits in on our meetings. Your sponsor today, the National Fire Sprinkler Association. State Farm Insurance was the first insurance company to step up to the plate and sit on our steering committee. Underwriters Laboratories and the U.S. Fire Administration. So if I can just start off with some basic facts. As we all know, again, preaching to the choir, 8 out of 10 fire deaths do occur in the home. That's where people feel safest. Fire sprinklers save lives, reduce property loss, and can even help homeowner insurance premiums decrease. Home fire sprinklers can contain and may even extinguish a fire in less time than it takes the fire department to arrive on the scene. Data shows that when you are installing both smoke alarms and a fire sprinkler system, it reduces the risk of death in the home by 82%, and that is relative to having neither. Only the sprinkler closest to the fire will activate spraying water directly on the fire, and 90% of fires are contained by the operation of just one sprinkler. And that's probably our biggest challenge and our biggest myth that we deal with as a coalition, especially in our public education, is that, and we like to blame Hollywood, people think that the entire system goes off and that putting sprinklers in your home will lead to water damage. And so one of the biggest efforts we have is to let the public know, and even other target audiences. I'm at the builder show right now, and there are oftentimes builders that don't know how they operate. But we want people to know that each sprinkler is individually activated by heat, that you really need, you know, a fire to start building and get up to about 135, 145 degrees before it will activate that one single sprinkler. Nationally, on average, home fire sprinklers cost about 1.5% to 2% of the total building cost in new construction. It kind of varies across the country, so that's why the coalition likes to use that number, the total building cost. I live in the Chicagoland area, and I know that comes out to $2 to $2.25 a square foot. Down in the Scottsdale area where they've been installing sprinklers, they've had an ordinance for 20 years now, since 1986, and they have close to 50,000 single-family homes sprinklered. And because of supply and demand, the cost of putting a sprinkler system in a home in Scottsdale is more in the 80 cents a square foot range. Home fire sprinklers only use a fraction of the water used by fire department hoses. That's another thing. People think that sprinklers will release a lot of water, where they release about 13 to 25 gallons per minute, compared to a fire department hose that will release about 250 gallons of water per minute. And modern residential sprinklers are inconspicuous, and they can be mounted flush with walls or ceilings. Another challenge we have, a lot of consumers will see the industrial or commercial type sprinklers, and, you know, the feedback we get is, well, we don't want to put this ugly big thing inside our home. And the fact is, residential sprinklers, you know, are very attractive, and the concealed sprinklers have a plate on them, and the plate is flush with the ceiling. So those are the facts about the sprinklers. The coalition itself, we have a lot of educational material, but we do target a number of audiences, starting with the consumers. And as I mentioned earlier, we do really focus on new construction, but when we are trying to educate that group, we even focus further on those who are planning to build a new home, the parents of young children, and people in the 50-plus age category, because we want to reach those high-risk groups, the young children and the older adults. But some of the other target groups that we try to educate are members of the fire service, which is why I'm glad I have this opportunity today. Also, home builders, as I mentioned, we're the coalition, and the fire sprinkler industry has a big booth at the International Builder Show, where more than 110,000 members of the home building industry are attending right now. And we're getting a lot of positive feedback as home builders come to our booth and seek some information. We also are now starting to educate water purveyors, and we're just finishing up some education programs for the insurance agents working with State Farm to put that message together, and realtors, because as more residential ordinances are being passed throughout the country and more people are now buying these homes, when they go into model homes, oftentimes the realtors are the only people they're talking to. And if they walk into a new model home and see it's sprinkler, they may ask the realtor, won't they all go off at once? So we're now relying on the realtors to educate those people. And so the coalition has now recognized the need to educate realtors. So the objectives of the coalition are to increase consumer awareness and knowledge, equip the fire service with resources, and I'll go over all the different resources we have in a couple minutes, motivate builders to promote home fire sprinklers at least as an option in new construction and to even consider sprinklering their model homes, and to educate water purveyors to eliminate sprinkler roadblocks that we're learning more and more about. So the coalition, in all of our efforts, we really have seen a lot of challenges with the consumers. It is lack of awareness. I mentioned the Hollywood factor. You know, people think that the entire system goes off. So as I said, we're constantly trying to educate how sprinklers work. Lack of support from builders is often a challenge we have with consumers. We may convince them that when they're building a new home, they want to put sprinklers in, but we hear from many consumers who then find out that their builders have told them that, you know, they don't need them, new houses don't burn. They live in an area that has a high response time, and so there are many situations where the builders have talked them out of putting sprinklers in. Also, unaware of insurance discounts. That's another question we get quite a bit, and our work with State Farm has allowed us to try and educate on that topic. Challenges with the builders. Oftentimes we hear from them that they don't want to put sprinklers in because they'd have to work with another subcontractor. Additional cost is often something that they bring up. We just here at the Builder Show heard from some builders who said they don't want the added liability that they're afraid if sprinklers go off that then suddenly they have to deal with litigation. Ordinances, of course, is an issue with builders. And again, oftentimes we hear from builders where they just truly believe that new homes don't have fires. So we have to educate that group and let them know it's not the homes that are the issue, it's the people inside and their behavior. We do have our challenges also with the sprinkler contractors, and the NFSA, our sponsor today, does a great job helping educate their own members, especially the contractors who do primarily commercial work. They need to be educated on how to do business and how to work with home builders. It's a totally different business compared to working with the commercial builders. Also, the ones that do decide that they're going to do residential work, they need to make sure that they're doing it cost-effectively, because it is important that these systems stay cost-effective, because that's a big part of our challenge. Other challenges, lack of a true national education program. Our funds are limited, so the coalition will do what it can. We have been fortunate for the last 3 years to receive FIREC grants, and so with those grants, we have put together some excellent educational program that is available free to anybody who visits our website or calls our toll-free number, and I'll, again, go over those in a minute. But just to finish up on some of our challenges, we are learning more about water supply issues, and it's just lack of awareness from water purveyors in terms of backflow issues, standby fees, tap-in fees, and some of those types of things. So the coalition is working on programs now to try and educate that group. Just real quickly, talking about trade-ups, the Home Fire Sprinkler Coalition is a supporter of the National Association of Home Builders 50-plus council, and those are builders who build specifically for older active adults. And the reason we've been talking to that group is because those builders have a real interest in learning about the trade-ups that are available when they do put sprinklers in entire developments. And some of those trade-ups are, if developers will put sprinklers in the entire development, they could see decreased street widths, turnaround distance, it may eliminate other egresses or access points, increase development density, decrease fire flow, increase hydrant spacing, and eliminate cistern requirements. So there are trade-ups, and as we are here at the Builder Show and try to educate the builders and developers, now we're talking to them from a business standpoint, and they show a real interest in learning about those types of benefits. Real quickly, I'll go over the different resources we have. To educate consumers, and we really have thousands of members of the fire service who are using our Protect What You Value Most. It's an 11-minute video that just goes over all of the main points, all the key points that consumers need to know about residential sprinklers. Our spokesperson is Ron Hazelton. In fact, he's here at the show right now, and just an excellent spokesperson. He lives in a sprinklered home. Many people recognize him as the home improvement editor from Good Morning America. He also has a syndicated program called House Calls, and so he is recognized and respected by the many target groups that we talk to, and he is our spokesperson in all of our educational videos, including Protect What You Value Most. Here at the Builder Show, we're promoting our Built for Life program. We have a kit that consists of a pocket folder, and it has the Built for Life 17-minute video in it. The purpose of the video is to educate members of the home building industry about the design and installation of a residential sprinkler system according to NFPA 13D. And Ron, again, was inside a home under construction, and he walks through and he points out all the details that you need to know about the design and installation. And actually, in addition to members of the building industry who have been requesting it, our biggest requester is coming from the fire service. We'll get fire departments who will request enough kits for every builder in their fire department who currently has a permit. And we've heard some fire departments who've actually invited the builders to meetings where they've shown them videos and answered their questions. Others have just handed it out to them. So we've already distributed over 30,000 Built for Life kits, and again, primarily through members of the fire service who are requesting it and passing it on to the home builders in their communities. Our other piece now, again, as we're seeing more and more communities adopt 13D ordinances, We actually had a builder who came up to us a couple years ago and said, okay, I'm building in an area where I have to put sprinklers in. Certainly the Home Fire Sprinkler Coalition must have some educational material that I can give now my home buyers so they understand how they work. And we kind of looked at each other and we said, you know, we really don't have anything specifically for that. So we used Fire Act grant money and we developed our program called Living with Sprinklers. And that is for people who are purchasing homes that are already sprinklered. And Ron walks through his own sprinklered home, and he'll point out that each sprinkler is individually activated, that it really is easy to live in a sprinklered home. You know, just don't paint them, don't hang things from them. Teach your children to respect them as they do your other appliances, such as your water heater and your furnace. And, you know, just respect the fact that you are living in a house where you have a life-saving system in it. And he also shows you how to do a flow test and then recommends that if you're just uncomfortable with that, that you should call your sprinkler contractor to do it or even your fire department for more information. So we really do. We have some excellent information, and I mentioned we have some in the works right now, including, and we're going to introduce it in a few weeks, Captain Splash and the Droplets. And that'll be an interactive education piece for children in kindergarten through sixth grade. And we're really going to target that education program, again, to those areas where sprinklers are required. Scottsdale has almost 50,000 sprinklered homes, so they're raising generations of children in sprinklered homes. So we want to make sure that those kids, you know, understand that, yes, smoke alarms will warn you if there's a fire, and sprinklers will start working on the fire so that you can practice your family escape plan, get out of that house, and hope, you know, we really want those children to understand what is in their house and what is protecting them.
Okay, great. It sounds like the same theme that we're hearing time and again, Peg, and from everybody else, is education. You know, no matter whether you're talking about prevention, you're talking about smoke alarms, you're talking about sprinklers, it always seems to come down to educating somebody or some group or some entity, and it sounds like you're doing a lot of great education just trying to raise that awareness.
Yes, thank you, Ed.
Yeah. At this point, we're going to take a short break, and just to remind you that you're listening to radio at firehouse.com, and we'll be back right after the break.
This podcast is sponsored by the National Fire Sprinkler Association. It is alarming that 3,000 people in the U.S. die each year from fire, most of them in their own homes. The solution is a simple one. The inclusion of the time-tested and proven technology of residential fire sprinklers in all residential structures. If you are a fire or building official, you owe it to your community to attend the International Code Council Final Action Hearing in Rochester, New York, May 22nd to the 25th of this year, and vote for the modification of the International Residential Code to require fire sprinklers in all residential structures. For more information about the residential fire sprinklers, contact the Home Fire Sprinkler Coalition at www.homefiresprinkler.org.
Okay, welcome back to radio at firehouse.com. We're talking about multiple fatality catastrophic fires that seem to be happening across the country with a little more frequency. And we've brought together a large group of experts to really give us a different perspectives, prevention, smoke alarms, sprinklers. And prevention is a real key component to all of this. We seem to be hearing the same theme of education over and over and over again. And it's difficult. I mean, all of you out there know that you have to be diligent. It's something you have to constantly be doing, and you have to be doing it throughout the year. You can't just do it once and then say it's done. You have to really be driving the message home throughout the year to really remind and reinforce people. So the next person I'd like to introduce is Alan Schumann, who's the Georgia State Fire Marshal. He's been there for 7 years as State Fire Marshal. And before that, he was the fire chief in Riverdale, Georgia, and he has had a career of over 30 years in the Fire and Rescue Service. He's also currently vice president of the National Association of State Fire Marshals. And Alan was earlier telling me about some great successes they've had in Georgia in bringing down the number of fire deaths they've had, and actually how they've gone about doing it through a very cooperative type of approach. So, Alan, do you think you could fill us in on that and also some of the challenges you face as a state fire marshal in trying to deal with these kind of tragedies?
Sure, be glad to, Ed. First of all, I'd like to thank Firehouse and you for putting this together. I think this will give everybody an opportunity to hear what everybody's doing throughout the country, and this is an outstanding opportunity for all of us. The challenges for a state fire marshal, of course, are many of us have the responsibility of investigating these type fires too, Ed. So it's imperative that we do a scientific forensic type approach as to what did happen during the catastrophic event, and to find out in detail what went wrong prior and during the incident. So it's very important that we collect the proper data so we can find out what we need to be doing for future endeavors, whether it's with the building codes or our educational leads, like we've talked about, for these types of fires. Some of the challenges that we found was, like everyone else has said, getting the word out. It's so difficult from the rural areas of the state of Georgia. We have a population of over 8 million people in the state of Georgia. So we really had to look outside the fire prevention box to find what we needed to do to communicate and find a delivery method that we could use to our citizens. And we went back and formed partnerships with our state education department to help us with some curriculum in the schools and to help us with the fire drills. They report their fire drills to us monthly on a website for our office, so we can track that they're actually doing them throughout the state of Georgia. So we know that the word's getting out there to the children that they need to do this at home too when we go into those communities and talk about fire safety. We also form partnerships with our Department of Health and Human Services division, so we could offer some smoke alarm grant programs for local fire departments. That has worked real well. They actually do install these smoke alarms and track their operations and go back and actually get the batteries to put back in them. So that works in a lot of the communities that we've worked with. But the most important thing is just forming partnerships. We've got a lot of statewide fire-related associations, from inspectors to investigators to fire chiefs and firefighter associations, and we've partnered with them very closely to help get the word out about fire safety. I think you mentioned 4% earlier, and that's the most important part. We've got to get out and find those. We do a good job in Georgia getting our message to the school children through our school systems. We go to a lot of camps. We have our own fire safety division here in the state fire marshal's office, where we have the access of 3 different fire safety houses that we use across the state, and we do take them out. We see some 20,000 children a year with each one of those homes, and we get a lot of our information delivered that way. We know what's working in Georgia. We have seen a steady decrease in our fire deaths. I'm pleased to say that in 2006, for the first time in many, many years, the state of Georgia had under 100 total fire deaths, 96 to be exact. Now, that's something I don't like to brag a whole lot about, because we all know that our target number is 0. So we think we've made outstanding strides in getting the word out. The downward trend does need to continue. And like I said earlier, by looking outside the fire prevention box for new and better ways to improving our communications, maybe we can continue our downward trend. You know, it's easy to look at and say, well, if we lived in an ideal world. We've heard from earlier conversations regarding residential sprinklers, new and improved smoke alarms. We know they're coming down the pipe. New technology is running faster at us than it's ever run before. And we need to incorporate those type of things into building codes for the future. We have got to get outside that fire prevention box. If you think it'll work, try it. If it doesn't, fix it, move it to something else, and try it again. We've got to keep open minds about getting the communications that we need to the citizens that we're sworn to protect in the state fire marshal's offices.
One of the things you mentioned, Alan, is, you know, all these different groups kind of coming together, forming coalitions and partnerships, because we all have the same mission. We all want to save lives. And I was just kind of wondering, why wasn't that happening before, and what were some of the problems you might have had in bringing these people together? Was it just a case of, you know, nobody just thought of doing it? Or was there some sort of reason that these groups just never were, you know, singing off the same sheet, so to speak?
I think it was the music. It was in different directions. Once we got in front of them and we had collected the proper data that we needed to collect, I think it does, the data collection does impact a little bit. And when you can stand in front of these executive boards and show them the proper data that's been collected of the fire issue in your state or your community, I think it gets that message across a little bit better.
Okay. Well, you've had some great success in Georgia there, and it's probably pretty challenging, too, with all the rural areas because we see so many of these fires happening out in the rural areas. In terms of reaching that demographic, those people out there, that must be a real challenge for you.
It is a real challenge, and that's why you have to look at these other state agencies that are, have a stakeholder, sort of, you may say, in the rural communities of Georgia. At least that's what we found. We've opened our doors, and I think that's what you have to do. I think you have to open up and say, we need help getting the word out. You'd be surprised that other state agencies like the Department of Human Resources and others are there and are available to help you get that word out. They have the same mission, and it's to take care of the citizens of the state you live in.
Well, thanks a lot, Alan. Really appreciate your joining us and giving us your perspective kind of from the 35,000-foot level, you know, in the big picture when it comes to state fire marshal and the challenge that you face at that level as well.
Thank you, Ed.
Moving along, one of the things you keep hearing is education and some of the challenges of reaching out to some of these people on these different demographics and, you know, how do we reach kids? How do we reach senior citizens? And how do we reach that demographic in the middle? You know, it takes a challenge. And that's, and as Alan just mentioned, too, you have to think outside the box a little bit. Okay, now we're going to turn to Ben May for our next segment of the show. And Ben is a Firehouse.com and Firehouse Magazine contributing editor and has been developing the discipline of fire and emergency services marketing management for the past 15 years. He's been a firefighter and a fire commissioner, but now he's responsible for business development for Epcot at Walt Disney World Resort. And he initiated an alliance with Liberty Mutual Insurance Company and the U.S. Fire Administration to develop the largest interactive fire education experience in the world at Epcot called Where's the Fire, which now receives approximately 4 million guests from around the world annually. Ben, given this recent surge of catastrophic multiple fatality fires that have happened, It seems that we need to do more in terms of reaching out to people to drive home those messages of fire safety, you know, sprinklers, smoke alarms, cooking safety, smoking, egress, all those sort of things. And it looks like, obviously, we're having a tough time doing it, driving those messages home. Mm-hmm. You have any ideas on what we might be able to do to really reach out to the public and, change their behavior?
Thanks, Ed. I appreciate it. You know, the recent spate of these multiple death catastrophic fires point to the ongoing fire problem in the United States and really the need for each department to have a systematic action plan to get the word out to prevent these fires from occurring in any of the jurisdictions from the departments that are listening. But first, I think we need to take a step back to understand the nature of the problem and see how marketing can contribute to the solution. Most people in the United States and many of us in the fire service tend to accept the fact of multiple fires as a normal course of events, and that while the problem is better than it has been in the past, of course, fires are still occurring every day. It is seen to be the nature of the beast among us as well as the population, so that every evening when you turn on the TV news and you see a fire, a report of a fire, we kind of take it to be just the way things are. I mean, after all, that's why we're in the fire protection business, to locate, confine, and extinguish fires when they break out and do all that we can to prevent them from breaking out in the first place. Much of this, as those of us in prevention know, is based on our past and even present emphasis on suppression. And that's really part of our internal problem, is that we are suppression-based discipline, and that we are going to need to shift our emphasis from this kind of a suppression mentality to one of a prevention mentality, much as is being done in healthcare today. I mean, after all, suppression is a critical part of the fire protection system, but it's just one part of it. And with fires breaking out in our country every 80 seconds and about 8 people dying every day in residential fires, we have a major chronic problem, and it's called the fire problem. Now, most folks in the United States don't think we have a problem at all. They just think that it's normal to see those fires on TV every night. But the fact of the matter is that when you go to other, quote, civilized Western countries, such as the United Kingdom or Germany, or if you go to Asia, to Japan, this is not normal. We're not living in a normal situation in dealing with the fire problem. But we think that it is, because it's just like the frog in the warm water as it keeps heating up. We're just not aware of how difficult a situation we're in. Now, these recent deaths and recent fires really point to this, to the problem, and that the fact is that as difficult as hard as we try to get the prevention message out, it's becoming still more and more difficult to be effective. Now, one way to approach the fire problem would be to use a marketing plan. First of all, it's important for each department to have a strategic plan. That means sort of an overall plan about how you're going to deal with the problem in your own jurisdiction. And first, let's take one more step back and define what marketing is. Marketing for the fire service, as at least I define it, is exchange for mutual gain. We give our citizens protection, they give us their tax dollars. Marketing's contribution to diminishing the fire problem is giving our citizens the information and education they need to protect themselves and to know who to call and when they can't. This means establishing a goal and tactics to deal with the problem in each of our jurisdictions, prioritizing those populations at risk from an economic and geographic perspective. Most important is the need for communications mechanisms so our citizens have top-of-mind awareness of the problem and safe behaviors to mitigate it. Now, when such an unusual spike in multiple fatality fires occurs as the one we're discussing, one way for your department to attack the problem is to see it as an incident and apply an incident command approach. And the best bang for the buck will come, of course, from the media. So if you have a PIO, he or she becomes the sector commander. This is an opportunity to have the fire marshal or a chief officer on TV or radio news, or interviewed for the newspaper about the fire problem using this recent spate of multiple fatalities as the angle. Because in your particular locale, you may not have anything like this, so you're going to need to elevate the issue to a higher level of awareness. Those markets or jurisdictions and states near the ones with the recent fatalities will have a better chance of gaining the media's attention. Create a press release, such as the boilerplate Ed Camo from Campus Firewatch has provided, and send it to your contacts at all key media outlets. When you have an incident in your jurisdiction, you can tie a local incident to the recent spike of fatalities across the country, and then tie both situations to the overall fire problem, pointing out that seeing fires every week or so on the local TV news is not normal when compared to other countries in the civilized world. You don't have to have an incident to bring this issue to the media now, but unfortunately, these incidents are certainly going to raise the noise level, as they say. They provide the teachable moment and the hook to discuss the overall fire problem and the necessary behaviors citizens need to practice to prevent fires, such as checking smoke alarms, considering sprinklers, and new construction. It's the perfect kind of situation to bring up to lawmakers in those jurisdictions considering new mandatory sprinkler legislation. Now, one of the best systems that I've seen to immediately get the word out is the USFA's Quick Response Media Corps. Approximately 2 years ago, Firehouse featured a story about the process and the effectiveness of this Quick Response Media Corps. You can contact the USFA, Kathy Gerstner, at 301-447-1350 or Kathy, K-A-T-H-Y dot Gerstner, G-E-R-S-T-N-E-R at DHS.gov. Anytime you have an incident, and she will immediately send to you through their advertising firm, Hager Sharp, all necessary information so that you can then have press releases, facts about fire, and immediately release them to the press when you need them. Another possibility is to form strategic alliances with companies in your response area, especially ones that have multiple outlets, like grocery stores or Home Depot. You can also form these alliances with schools, churches, the Red Cross, anywhere where you can begin to develop a message with their message to get the word out about fire prevention and education.
Okay. One of the things, Ben, that, you know, that was a great idea that you brought up there about Kathy Erzner, and we'll include that information on the page that people can go to down below. If you look for the links there, we'll see more information on that, because the USFA does have a really great site and great, you know, wealth of information. And that's the thing, too, is that everybody's got a lot of good information that we really need to start pulling together and starting to use. Now, one of the things you brought up, too, Ben, is that, you know, is marketing. And that's something that I think most fire departments and the fire service in general really don't think about. It's kind of a mindset change, isn't it, in terms of getting out there with the public? Marketing isn't just something that's kind of in the incident command toolbox, is it?
No, it's not, Ed. But marketing is, as I said, exchange for mutual gain. It's a way to do two things. The one is it's able to attack the fire problem from a prevention standpoint and a public awareness standpoint. Everybody loves the fire service, or most people do, and so we create awareness just by being there. Using marketing and marketing vehicles and instruments to create that awareness also brings up what the fire service does in each community. So you're really doing two things. Yes, you're certainly dealing with the fire problem in keeping the awareness level high of the issues, but at the same time, you're telling people what the fire service does on an ongoing basis. That Maltese cross has what is known as brand equity, and that brand equity is as high as the highest kind of private enterprise brand, such as Coca-Cola or even my company, the Walt Disney Company. It's all good. It's all American. It's strong, and it means that we're going to take care of you. So you're really creating two great things when you put together a marketing plan, but you have to have a strategic plan and approach to achieve your goals.
Well, I really appreciate your perspective on this, Ben. You know, you really do bring a new perspective to it. I know for a lot of fire professionals, myself included, where it's just something that we really haven't thought about in the past, but you know, there's no reason to not do it. It works for thousands of companies every day in terms of reaching out to the public and informing them of their products, their services, what they do. And there's really no reason for the fire service to not try to adopt the same sort of tact in terms of reaching out, because we do need to try something new. We do need to try something different.
Well, Ed, you know, it's no different than any fire department usually has a strategic plan of how they want to grow the department and what they need to do to take care of all the priorities within their jurisdiction. The marketing plan, it comes from the strategic plan. It's simply a matter of knowing those populations that are at risk, where they're located, what the target hazards are, and then creating a public awareness plan around those things to mitigate the fire problem. The difficulty is that we still have a suppression mentality. We still feel that if we just get there faster, it's going to take care of the situation, and it's not going to do it. With over 6,000 messages bombarding the American consumer every day, according to the American Advertising Association, you can see how difficult it is to get a public service message out, such as fire prevention, among all of those others. So when you have a situation that we're experiencing right now, it's necessary to take advantage of that teachable moment, and that's where marketing's contribution can make the difference.
Well, Ben, really appreciate you taking the time and joining us here today.
My pleasure.
You know, it's just a great perspective, and along with all the other people that we have giving the ideas out there today, I think, you know, we can start raising that awareness and moving forward in making the mindset, the change in the mindset that we need to make. So thanks a lot, Ben.
Okay.
The next person we'd like to introduce to wrap this up, who also has a pretty innovative and unique view on fire prevention, is Ozzie Murkaw, who's a fire protection engineer with the City of Las Vegas Fire Department and holds a number of certifications in his field. He's also a contributing editor at firehouse.com and is a widely published author, and most recently wrote a really compelling article for the International Fire Marshal Association called Lock the Barn Door, and you can see that right on our webpage here, and actually that article, as it turns out, is going to be published in a number of publications, but you can read it right here at firehouse.com. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Ozzy, and maybe you can give us your perspectives when it comes to fire prevention on a national level, and maybe some of the history we've had and maybe some of the lack of success we've had in really pushing it as we should. Ozzie?
Thanks, Ed. As my peers have identified, the crux of the fire problem in America is residential fires. I believe that we need to take a look at the fire problem in our country from two perspectives, one from the societal perspective and then from the fire service perspective. From the society's perspective and priority, there are 1.6 million fires every year, and few fire deaths here and few fire deaths there, as you said. They don't make it to the headlines, and they don't stay on the headlines for long. And the society does not see fire as a major priority, and that underlines the importance of what we need to do to change the societal values, and it can be changed through public education, long-term, persistent public education. And a good example of it is the cigarette smoking, which was, you know, in a way, passage to adulthood way back when. Now it's a taboo. And as Judy and Heather, you mentioned, we need to work on public education to change the societal perspective and priorities. Now, from the fire service priority and perspective, I believe the question to be answered is to be or not to be. I'm a proud member of the fire service, but I think it's just about time that we do a gut check, you know, in all honesty, answer whether the fire losses in our country is an acceptable loss rate, or whether it's a disgrace to have such high fire deaths, and we deem these losses to be not acceptable. Obviously, as my friends talked about, we have come a long way through the hard work of many organizations, and we have addressed the fire problem in our country in reducing the fire fatalities from when the 1973 America Burning Report was first published. But then we need to do a self-critique with the goal of trying to do better in future. We need to learn from our mistakes and try to do better in future. My personal answer to that gut check is no, it's not an acceptable loss. Why isn't it an acceptable loss? Because I believe we have the knowledge and we have the feasible technology to eliminate these losses a lot further, much further. As Peg talked about, we have residential fire sprinkler systems there, and Heather talked about smoke detectors, and together with these two technologies that are available and feasible, we can reduce the fire deaths in our country by 82%. My friends, that's shooting fish in a barrel. It's Eureka. We have the target. We know how to solve the problem. So why aren't we doing it then? The second reason why I think we got to do a lot better is because I think we got to take a look at the magnitude of the losses and comparing it with other losses to see what significant task is upon us and what professional obligations we have to address the fire problem in our country. I think the trees are not letting us see the forest. Rather than looking at it from the local perspective of fire, that's here, one or two here, a little fire here or there, we need to take a look at it and recognize the magnitude of the fire problem from a national perspective. Now, to do that, let's put the magnitude of these losses in comparing with some of the current significant national issues that we hear about day in and day out. We, in 2003, based on the reports from NFPA, have the cost of fire in America was $226 to $272 billion, which was 2 to 2.5% of our gross domestic product. My friends, that is more than the country of Saudi Arabia, the largest oil producer country in the world, made back in 2004, based on World Bank statistics before 2004. Next time around when we are filling our gas tank, we should be thinking about this. This is a major, major drain to our economy. Now, look at it, again, from a very unbiased, nonpartisan, non-political point of view. Compare our fire loss statistics and fire cost statistics to the war in Iraq. During the past 3 years since the war started, we lost the cost of war in Iraq was $350 billion, and we lost 3,000 of our bravest in Iraq. Now, during the same period of time, at the rate of $250 billion a year cost of fire and 4,000 fire fatalities, We spent $750 billion on cost, and 12,000 people died in fires. Now, next time you watch the national evening news and hear about our losses in Iraq, remember that we are spending more than twice that much for fire costs in America, and our casualties here are four times higher than we are losing our bravest in Iraq. It doesn't get much attention because, again, it doesn't make it to the radar as far as the media is concerned. Now, as I said, I'm a proud member of the fire service. But I must admit that based on our track records, as you asked, for the past 30 years, why we haven't done much better, I think we are talking from both sides of our mouth. At the national level, the national leadership of all the organizations clearly and correctly write about the problems and try to focus more and consistently addressing the fire sprinklers, fire smoke, smoke alarms, and the need to focus on fire prevention and fire protection system to reduce the fire fatalities in our country and bring the property losses down. But then when it comes to the local levels, all that fizzles out and it's back to the status quo. At the local level, they're more focused on suppression and minimal priority goes to fire prevention. Now, I'm proud of the fact that we have had the depth of knowledge and experience and historical vision for the past 60 years to identify the fire problem and the solutions, not only in the 1947 Presidential Conference on Fire Prevention, but in the 1973 America Burning Report, but also 1987 America Burning Revisited and the 2000 America Burning Recommissioned. We know what the problem is. We have the depth of knowledge. And we have the vision and the recommendations how to solve the problem, and I am proud of that. But then I'm ashamed that for the past 60 years, we haven't addressed the problem yet. President Truman, back in 1947, said, and I read this, "The serious losses in life and property resulting annually from fires cause me deep concern. I'm sure that such unnecessary waste can be reduced. The substantial progress made in the science of fire prevention and fire protection in this country during the past 40 years convinces me that the means are available for limiting this unnecessary destruction." My friends, recognized in 1947, he was talking about technologies available at the early part of the 20th century, in 1917. Now, back then, President Truman believed that we had the technology to address the problem. 60 years later, that fact hasn't changed. We have known, we have had the technology, and yet persistently failed to utilize it to its maximum capacity to address the fire problem in our country. And that problem needs to be solved. That is, fire service needs to be more aware of this. We need to do more public education on the fire service to get the entire fire service behind us. What do I suggest? I think the fire loss management plan that was identified in the 1973 America Burning Report is a great solution. I think we need a fire loss management plan both at the national level and the local level to keep us all accountable and responsible for reducing our country's fire costs. Fire loss management back in 1973, when they talked about it, they said that they need to identify means to reduce the fire losses beyond mere suppression, and that should have been done at the local level. They said in the America Burning Report that there needs to be more emphasis on fire prevention. We need to spend more effort in educating our children and educate adults and enforcing codes. That's what was discussed back in 1973, and that has not been done yet. We don't have a fire loss management plan at the national level. We have various organizations working their hearts out, just like PEG and HFSC and all the other organizations, trying to promote a cause that we are, but as my friend from Georgia talked about, we are going about it in a different directions, and we do not have the same sheet of music. We need to have a national fire loss management plan that identifies tangible, specific goals and measurable goals and identify deadlines associated with that. We need to have statistical measures such as double the number of homes with fire sprinklers in our country from the current 2% to 4%, let's say in the next 10 years. Recognize my friends. For the past 20 years, we have had only 2% of houses in America sprinklered. That is 1% every 10 years. At this rate, it's going to take 1,000 years to get sprinklers in all houses. I'm a patient person, but not that patient. The sprinkler technology is going to be obsolete by then. We need to do a lot more, and we got to do it now. We need to have statistical requirement for, that, for example, reduce the, you know, the 4,000 fire fatalities by 5% in 5 years. Reduce the firefighter fatalities by 25%, just like the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation has done. That's a great idea. Decrease our property losses by $14.5 billion that we have by, let's say, 5% in the next 5 years. You know how much money would we save by doing that? And you know what we can do then? We can use that fire loss management plan at the national level to hold the local jurisdictions accountable. They are the ones who should address the fire problem in their jurisdictions. How can we do that? We can do that through fire grants. If they want to get fire grants, we should have obstacles there for them. So they not obstacles per se, but provisions there that they must have a fire loss management plan in their jurisdictions if they're going to apply for it. What would that do? That would force them to think proactively rather than suppressing the fires alone. Now they got to think about means of addressing the fire problem a heck of a lot more proactively. And I think that would bring emphasis on fire prevention and fire protection systems and sprinkler systems. No other governmental entities do that, and they do that successfully. EPA does it, Federal Highway Administration does it, they do it, and so should we. We got to have an accountability system there. There's a Japanese proverb that says, vision without action is a daydream. Action without vision is a nightmare. I think that's a great maxim because, you know, if you do not think about what you're doing, you're going to do many foolish things. And on the other hand, if you're just thinking and thinking alone and never do anything to materialize it, then you're just daydreaming. This might sound harsh, and, you know, again, I'm saying it with pride. I'm a proud member of the American Fire Service. But it is time that we wake up. I believe that we have the vision, and we have had it for more than 60 years. It's time to stop daydreaming and doing more about addressing the fire problem and reducing the total cost of fire in our country. In conclusion, I must say that I'm proud to admit all of the things that I talked about and the concepts and issues, none of them are mine. They're not even original. All of these were identified by our fathers in the 1947 President's Conference Report, in the 1973 America Burning Report, in the 1987 America Burning Revisited, and the 2000 America Burning Recommission Report, and many, many conferences and seminars that we have had. You know what? Great ideas, great visions, but it is just about time that we materialize those great visions. We have done a wonderful job reducing the fire fatalities from 10,000 in 1973 to 4,000 now. We should not be satisfied with that. We got to do a heck of a lot more, and I think with the committed people that are on your panel and with the leadership that USFA and IAFC and NFPA and NFSA and AFSA and all those organizations are providing, eventually we'll get there. But again, I'm not a patient person. I hope that we get there sooner.
Well, thanks a lot, Ozzie, and I have to agree with you. I'm not patient enough to wait 1,000 years. I don't think anybody else is to get the kind of change that we really need to see. Go ahead.
Ed, this is Judy. Listen, here's a challenge. How many people are aware of the Coalition for Fire Safe Cigarettes? We all know that smoking is the number one cause of fire deaths, where we see between 700 and 900 people dying each year. Well, the Coalition for Fire Safe Cigarettes is working toward legislation to require fire safe cigarettes. And so far, we have 6 states that have passed legislation, but we still need more work, and this is a great opportunity for everyone listening to this program to get involved. Go to the website firesafecigarettes.org and find out what you can do, because this is a way of all of us getting involved to have a large impact on the fire deaths.
And there are so many programs like that. It's kind of like back to what Alan was talking about. There's so many different organizations that may not necessarily be on the same sheet and singing the same music that, yeah, we all need to start looking at this and working cooperatively in terms of how we can all, you know, get together and make the best use of our voices and our forces. I mean, I think a really great example of this, and the reason I'm going to bring it up is because, you know, campus fire safety is what I'm into, is Seton Hall. You know, they had the fire there in January 2000 that killed 3 students, right? Terrible tragedy, but let's keep in mind, it was just 3 people that died. But as a result of that fire, where only 3 people died out of the 4,000 that die every year, New Jersey passed the most sweeping legislation where they required the installation of sprinklers in all residence halls, all Greek housing, all student housing, in essence, statewide, and they paid for it. Now, the only reason that happened is that there were champions in the state. There were people that got together, all the different organizations, they got together, and they spoke with the same voice, and they kept pushing it, and they kept it in the forefront, and they kept working with the media, like Heather was talking about, you know, working with the media, keeping it out there, keeping people's attention. So within months, legislation was signed, put into law, and funding because people worked together, because they kept the voices loud and constant, and they kept in the forefront of everybody's mind. So I think, you know, probably, you know, unless anybody wants to really dissent with what I'm saying here, I think what we probably learned out of this is, one, we all have to work together, and we have to keep educating and aware and making people aware of the importance of fire safety. And these multiple fatality fires that we see are tragedies, but they are also the ultimate teachable moment where we can take these tragedies and turn them around and use them to drive home all of these messages that we're talking about, all these different lessons, whether it's prevention, detection, or suppression. They can all come together after these fires and say, okay, this happened somewhere else. Let's make sure it doesn't happen here. And take these messages to the public and take it to the media and take it to our legislators and really try to affect the change that we all really want to see, because, you know, we all know the solutions. We've known them for years. Well, we need to make the public aware of it and try to, so we don't have to wait 1,000 years, like Ozzy said, because I don't think any of us are willing to wait 1,000 years to see the kind of change that we want to see. Well, with that, I think, you know, we had a really great program here. We had some great ideas. It brought it all together, kind of synthesized a lot of different views and information here. A lot of information was thrown at everybody, but we're going to have all these websites and all these links on the page here at radio@firehouse.com, where you can take a look and get this information and use it in your local community, where you can really try to make the change you need to see. So, a call to action. I really encourage you to try to use this information. Take a look at these fires. Use them to bring the attention to your local community, whether it be your city, your town, or your state, or even nationwide. Let's get some of these national organizations on board, all working together in the same direction. So take a look at the links, use them. And if you have any ideas, too, let us know. Take a look at, you know, we'll see if we can put a link there where you can send me an email or submit your ideas on programs that have worked for you in your community. Let's share it with everybody else out there. So I'd really like to wrap this up with, first of all, thanking radio@firehouse.com for being the host of this program. And I'd certainly like to thank the National Fire Sprinkler Association for sponsoring this. You know, they've got some great information there at their website at www.nfsa.org. But I'd really like to thank our panel here, and that included Judy Carmeletti from NFPA, Heather Caldwell from KITA, Peg Paul from the Home Fire Sprinkler Coalition, Alan Schumann from the Georgia State Fire Marshal and from National Association of State Fire Marshals, Ben May from Walt Disney World, and Ozzy Murkoff from the City of Las Vegas Fire Department. Everybody just really rallied to the call on this and said, you know, it's an important issue. Let's get this out here. Let's get some information. Let's start a dialogue on this. Let's start a conversation. So I really appreciate everybody just taking the time out. And with that, it's the end of this podcast, but I'm sure it's not the end of this issue. And just keep a look here at radio@firehouse.com for more information that you can use in your community. Thank you very much for listening.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio. We'll be right back.